Member Week is here at Lowe's. That means it's time for MyLowe's Rewards members to save big with up to 40% off hundreds of items like appliances, tools, home essentials, and more. Plus, get free standard shipping. Shop these exclusive member-only savings now through October 15th. Not a rewards member? Join for free today. Free standard shipping not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
All right. Welcome to a Back It Up Friday show. This is something that I haven't done in a long time, one of these intros. But I'm doing an intro today because today is a special day. If you truckers out there are listening to this on Friday, April 26th, it's a very special day because one of the hosts of this show has a birthday on April 26th. I won't tell you which Brian it is, but I think you can guess because I'm giving the intro here for it. Brian Merkel, happy birthday to my father and to one of the great hosts of Hammer Lane Legends, one of the great truckers out there on the road. He is, for those of you who work at Pitt, Ohio, if you're hearing this right now, why don't you just go ahead and give him a little call or get, you know, annoy him, pest him. He's going to hate that I'm saying this, but I'm having a blast doing it. And wish him a happy birthday if you get a chance to see him. If you don't work at Pitt, Ohio, or you don't get a chance to see him, well, go ahead and shoot him a message on Facebook or Instagram or wherever else you follow him online and just wish him a happy birthday. I will not divulge his age, but I will say that he is a certain amount of years young, right? That's how we say it for those of his advanced age. Love you, Dad. Happy birthday. Hope you enjoyed this intro. And anyway, let's get to it.
Merkel Media.
Driver's door, ran out the side of the car, across the front of it, and jumped right off the side of the bridge in front of me.
The only people who really pulled over were truckers.
He said, "We're going Hodge," and he didn't slow down. He went across the median onto the oncoming traffic, but where they could see him coming, they just got out of the way.
I noticed this plane was really low. It went right in front of us, hit the fence, and it spun around. You know, 30 seconds more, he could have hit us.
And I went around that truck, and a guy stepped out from behind the truck and threw a piece of wood, and it shot through my window just like a spear and stuck in the back of the cab of my truck.
That's probably one of the stranger things I've seen.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to Hammer Lane Legends. I am your host, Tony Merkel.
And I am Brian Merkel.
We're really glad that you're here. If you have a crazy and wild experience you want to share with us from the road, go ahead and shoot us an email. Our email address is hammerlanelegends@gmail.com. That's hammerlanelegends@gmail.com. Or go to the website, hammerlanelegends.com, hit the contact section, and you can reach us that way as well. Either way works for us, just get a hold of us. Now, Dad, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. So we have Ken coming on the show this week, and Ken is an experienced driver. He doesn't drive anymore because of what happened to him, and we're going to get into it on the show, but he has a lot of different experiences. We had a good time talking to him, but before we get into Ken's interview on Hammer Lane Legends, we want to go over some voicemails, Dad.
Cool.
Yeah, we got some good voicemails coming up. We have a returning guest from the show on one of the phone calls, and then we have another one. So what do you want to do, Dad? Do you want to hear the returning guest, or you want to hear one that's kind of funny?
Let's start with the returning guest.
Returning guest?
We'll end with the funny one.
Okay, sounds good. So returning guest, we have Sam from episode 2. Remember Sam, right?
I do remember Sam. That I think everybody remembers Sam. That's exciting to hear back from him.
Yeah, so I mean, I remember we were sitting there doing that interview, and it was the first time we were doing interviews together.
Yes, it was.
And I'm looking at you, and I told you, I said, this is one of the best interviews I've ever done.
Right.
And I'm like, we're... this is crazy, like his experience and stuff. I mean, it was a great show. If you haven't heard it yet, go back to episode 2. I forget what we called it. Something about fueling something, or no, hauling fuel across the desert or something. I don't remember.
It's 30 shows ago.
Yeah. Episode 2. I know that. Episode 2. But Sam was a home run hitter that episode, and he called in a line. Let's take a listen.
Hey, Brian and Tony. This is Sam from episode 2. When I was on, I shared a lot of stories from Iraq, but I thought I'd call and share a story with you from when I drove over the road. I started driving before the internet or GPS. Cell phones had just started to be a thing, and I had to make all my phone calls from payphones. I'd call and get directions for every pickup and every unload. I've never seen an electronic logbook. I ran 2 or 3 logbooks, and I kept all my extra logbooks in the bottom of my dirty clothes bag. I figured that'd be the last place DOT would look for them if they were looking. It was a different world. I listened to you guys interview guys now and talk about how it is now, and it's hard to imagine. For example, I started working for a small family company. It had about 20 trucks, and our one dispatcher is an old crusty cowboy named Brett, and he was a great guy, but he was old school. And I was the youngest driver there, and he didn't know what to think about me. One day I called him from back east, and I said, "Hey Brett, I got to go through Rhode Island." But I was looking at the cab card, and we're not even registered for Rhode Island. And he said, "Well, it's a small state. If DOT or the highway patrols after you, just hammer down. You're not very far from a border." So that was Brett's attitude about everything. And one Friday night, well, it was Friday afternoon. It was pretty late, and I was loading in Indianapolis. I was the last truck that loaded, and I felt heavy when I pulled out. So I went to a little truck stop down the road, and I was 5,000 pounds over gross. So I called Brett, and I said, "Hey, Brett, I'm 5,000 pounds overweight, and the warehouse is closed." And this is a quote. I've never forgot it after over 20 years. Brett said, "Well, are you going to be a man and bring that truck home, or be a pussy and sit there all weekend?" And I said, "You old bastard." And Brian will remember this. Like I said, there was no internet. So I walked into the truck stop, and I bought the newest edition of the Trucker's Atlas that they had, which had every scale marked in every state. And I sat there for about an hour, and I planned to route home. And that weekend I drove almost 2,000 miles on 2-lane roads between Indianapolis and Idaho Falls, Idaho. I ended up in a little tornado in Kansas. I saw a Swift truck blown right off the road in front of me, but I was so heavy I was able to just keep trucking. Sunday, let's see, I made it all the way to the Idaho-Wyoming border. Had to sit there for about 4 hours in Alpine, Wyoming, waiting for a little tiny scale to close so I could get back into Idaho. Well, they finally went home, and I was in Idaho. I'd made it, only had about 50 miles to go. When I got to about 5 miles from where I had to unload, I come around the corner, and the DOT's got a portable scale set up. It was harvest time in Idaho, and they'd set up a portable scale to catch all the farmers running overweight. And I thought, oh my gosh, I've made it all the way halfway across the country, and I'm going to get a ticket 5 miles from where I got unloaded. Anyway, I pulled in there and rolled down my window, and the DOT officer climbed up on my step, and he said, "Boy, give me your bill of lading." handed him my bill waiting, and he said, he read it for a minute and said, "You loaded in Indianapolis?" And I said, "Yes, sir." And he said, "Well, you couldn't have made it this far without crossing a scale. Get the hell out of here." So I took off. I almost couldn't make it out of there before I started laughing, and I couldn't believe he let me go. But I got unloaded, and I was waiting in Brett's office Monday morning with a signed bill waiting. And, well, I thought he'd think I was a man now, but he never treated me any different, just like a dumb kid. But anyway, you guys are doing great. I look forward to your show every Monday. I used to hate Mondays. Now I look forward to it so I can hear the latest episode. And, well, if you like this old school story, maybe I'll call and share a few more with you. Keep up the good work.
All right, Sam, thanks for calling into the show. Dad, what do you think about that?
Oh, most definitely. Thanks for calling, Sam. That's awesome. I tell you what, it takes me back. That really takes me back. You know, those old school days.
I don't know anything about that, right?
No, exactly. Pre-internet, pre-GPS. Yeah. You know, everybody's got maps and everything else. They got the map books that have everything marked out for you. And, you know, even sometimes they were wrong. So, you know, that's cool.
I have maps in my truck, but it's because they were given to me by an old school driver. he got a new truck. Now he's retired. But when he got the new truck, I got the old truck, and he left all his crap in there. And I said, "You want any of this?" And he's like, "Nah, you can have it." I'm like, "Well, I'll keep the maps in there just so I look good, you know."
You look like a truck driver.
I look like a truck. Like, I know what I'm doing. But in reality, I've never touched the things. It's just, you know, Google Maps all day long. If I'm going to Philadelphia, that's what the maps are for, Philadelphia. But I don't. It's just, if I can't find it on Google Maps, then I'm
nostalgia.
Somebody else will get it tomorrow. So. It is what
it is. Are you going to be a man about this, or are you going to be a pussy? Apparently, I'm going to be a pussy.
I'm going to be a pussy. I like how when he called into the show, the first thing he says, "Hey, Brian and Tony." I'm like, "Whoa,
that's nice." You know?
But hey, you know, I guess real recognize real. So. But Sam, man, we'll definitely have you back on the show sometime.
Yeah, we'd love to.
I know when we're talking off air, Dad, we often talk about Sam and bringing him back on. There's several guests that we've had on before that would be great returning guests. I know we had Susan come back once now, and I know she'll be returning in the future. Susan's a fan favorite and obviously one of our favorites as well. So next up, we have just a short little voicemail, Dad, and I just thought it was funny. I wanted you to take a listen to it.
You guys were talking on the show about self-driving trucks. How about they get a self-flushing toilet to flush every time, so when I walk into the truck stop and I have to look at the last guy's doo-doo before they worry about self-driving trucks.
Right? So we're talking
about that.
Yeah, I think it was last week we were talking about self-driving trucks and stuff. Yeah. And he's like, "Well, how about we get some of these self-flushing toilets?" It's, you know, it's a real problem at truck stops and things like that. You walk into those bathrooms and they're nasty.
They are nasty. You know.
I remember I went to one of these stops, and I know this is going to get graphic, but I don't care. I went to a stop and I used the bathroom. Well, I didn't use the bathroom. I went to go use the bathroom.
It was already used.
Oh my God. I mean, there was feces everywhere, and on the seat there was feces with corn in it. It's like, this is so disgusting. Like, why would you do that? Like, it's clearly on purpose.
That's a great question. Do you do this at home? Because if you do, I don't want to visit you.
Right?
You know? No, if you don't do it at home, don't do it anyplace else. You know, other people have to use the facilities at times.
I had a roommate in college. After he was done using the bathroom, I go in and there's used toilet paper on the floor. I'm like, what?
How do you do that?
You missed this, dude. Like, what is wrong with you?
It can't be any closer to you.
No.
I mean, you can't miss the target. It's right there.
Like, you literally had to take it out of the toilet.
And drop it on the floor.
That happened. Like, I was just like, "Yo, get in here and clean this up. Here's some bleach, you know." Oh my gosh. But yeah, self-driving trucks, self-driving toilets. So he didn't say who he was and stuff, but driver, thanks for calling the hotline and giving us that laugh, man. Yes. I appreciate that.
That was worth it.
100%. So now that we went through the voicemail line, let's get to Ken and this great conversation of when Ken rolled a truck and he almost died. And it's a great story. And we also talk about him hauling fuel and, or not, was it fuel?
Yeah,
it was fuel to NASA and all that stuff. It was great conversation. Let's get to it right now. All right, today we got Ken on the show. Ken, how you doing, man?
I'm doing excellent, Tony. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. As good as I can be with 2020, you know what I mean? I was telling my parents and stuff when they got here that I feel like it must be just this year. I've been dealing with about the last like 2 or 3 weeks, I've been dealing with anxiety and not in a way where I can identify where it's coming from. Like, I have no idea, but usually late morning, early afternoon, it sets in and I start getting this anxiety where I have a hard time breathing. And it must be 2020, man. So you asked me how I'm doing. So I'm telling you, I'm dealing with anxiety.
Well, I tell you what, anxiety is linked to fear. Fear is the, what God tells you. He says, don't fear, you know, every time an angel would appear, he says, you know, do not fear. And I think maybe you should just look into that. What are you afraid of right now? And I bet you have a lot of anxiety, and it's due to your lovely wife and your two babies, you know, because everything's falling apart.
Yep. And I'm trying to keep the tribe together, trying to keep the roof over everybody's head. And I got that baby that was born a month ago. And, you know, I think that's a lot of stress and anxiety is just the idea of, you know, it's like, my son's at a point in age where I say, hey, get in the truck. There's just, you know, a mob coming down the road. He gets in the truck. With the baby now, it's all over again. It's like, do we have the diaper bag? Do you have this? Do you have that? It's just, it's the absolute dependency on us. And then, you know, driving a truck all day and stuff, all you have to do is time to think about these things. And you have time to think about what's going on in the world. And I, you know, I have to turn it off sometimes because I think that's probably, now that I'm talking it out and stuff, it's probably a big source of it, because it seems like the closer we're getting to November, the more anxious I'm getting.
Right. So. And the way 2020
absolutely. I would not surprise me if we've already heard the first shots being fired for a civil war. And I do believe that's coming myself. Just to re-encourage you, Tony, if you ever get in a situation where's the baby bag, this, guess what? The baby doesn't know there's trouble. Just grab the baby and things can be replaced.
Yeah.
People cannot.
Yep.
It don't matter.
Yes.
That's
good advice.
I'm going to get a mobile refrigerator, keep it on the back of my truck and just keep it stocked all the time.
you know, the whole thing with
I would, but it'd be full of Budweiser or Michelob Ultra.
The whole thing with the, you know, we've got to grab the baby, the mob's coming down the street as it's raining fire and there's tornadoes and there's an earthquake. I mean, that's 2020. It has been everything. I think this is literally going to be the year without a Santa Claus, you know? I mean, I think Rudolph was right and we're not going to have one this year.
Yeah. Coronavirus grew a face.
I wait for Sharknado.
Exactly. It's a crazy year. I mean, everything is falling apart, but at the same time, everything is falling in place.
Yeah.
That's a great insight, because actually things, if you look at 2020, and here's the thing, if you look at things, hindsight's 2020, when you look back of all the things that went wrong in your life, then you can see the interwoven connections for all the things that are most dear and personal to your life as well.
Yes.
I mean, because I'll tell you what, if I didn't have the accident where I was about to tell you about, I would have never came down to Tennessee. And if I'd have never came down to Tennessee, I'd never met an incredible woman.
I hear nothing but good things about Tennessee.
I tell you what, we got most of it's red, but you do have your blights of blue.
And I like that, blights of blue. Yes, well, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, it's like
blue.
A blight. It's like a cancer cell.
Yeah.
All right, fellas, let's not lose half our audience.
Yep.
I don't care about half your audience.
I care. I care, Kenny boy. Slow down the Budweiser there. I, no, I, I, me and my wife have been considering moving out of state, and Tennessee is pretty much number one on the list at this point. And so maybe we'll be neighbors one of these days, man. Maybe we won.
Absolutely. That'd be awesome, man.
The only problem is I got to find a way to drag my old man with me.
We'll be doing this over Skype.
You know what? If he came down, you know, I fell in love with this place. I mean, I'm from West Virginia, the home of the, you know, the almost heaven West Virginia, right?
Yep.
And I'm a hillbilly. I'm a hillbilly born and bred. I was up there 40 plus years, 42 years. And when I came down here, it's just, I just fell back in love, again. You know, I got out of the snow. Winters are like this. Oh, it's 20 degrees and like frost. Oh, but back home, it's 2 foot of snow. Oh, okay.
That, you know, that's the beauty of Tennessee. It is a beautiful place.
Right. It is. And the fact that you don't have to pay state tax, that's another. Yeah, you got 9.75 on the sales tax, but whoop-dee-doo.
Yeah, I was already planning on the idea of moving like north of Nashville. So if I had big purchases, I could just skip over to Kentucky and make those big purchases. That's what when I bought my house 5 years ago, I drove to Delaware for my furniture because there's no state sales tax on furniture. So I saved 6%. And, you know, hey, penny pincher right here, you know?
So, oh, I don't know about penny pinching.
Yeah.
I can squeeze a penny till I see his eyeballs bug out.
Poor Abe. All right. Well, listen, now that we got Tony's stresses of life out of the way, let's talk to you and get to know you a little bit here. So, okay. Ken, if I remember correctly in the email, you mentioned the way you said it, it sounds like you're not driving truck anymore. And it's due to what happened in 2013 where you had a near fatal accident. So right. What happened?
Okay. Well, I'll start at the beginning. I mean, it started like a normal day, you know, and I would drive from Hyco, West Virginia, down to Richmond, Virginia, and get loaded up a fuel tanker. I was a fuel tanker haul. I mean, at the time, I was hauling diesel and gasoline and stuff like that. So, on the last trip of the day, because I generally did two, which took about anywhere from 14 to 16 hours, even though we didn't have to run log, you know, we was within a 250 mile radius. So we was under that jurisdiction. So I went down to Richmond, got my final load for the day, and thankfully it was coming back to our bulk plant. We had a bulk plant of diesels and gasolines up in Hyco itself. So I was heading up through Rainell, West Virginia, and up on Route 60, and there's a mountain called Sewell Mountain. Well, at the very top of the mountain, when you get out of Rainell, there's a 25 mile an hour curve. Now, I remember distinctly me talking to my daughter at the end of, at the bottom of the hill. I was on a, you know, old Sprint cell phone with a flip with a antenna and everything. I told her, you know, I was coming home. It'd be about 2 hours because I had to go and unload the truck before I parked them. Well, that's the last thing I remember. The very next thing I remember is I hear one's voice say, "You want me to cut his pants off?" And I felt the scissors going up my left leg as my pants was going up. Then I thought to myself, well, she's going to be in a surprise because I'm going commando today. And I'm pretty sure there was a dead little bird nest there. Anyway, so next thing I know, she cuts my pants off. I raise my butt up because I'm conscious enough then. That was one of the little snippets. And I felt the blanket go on me. Next thing I know, I could feel the ambulance moving. I could feel the wind from the helicopter because I hit my head. I cracked my skull. I actually blew out my C5 out of my cervical neck bones. It was blown. It was if one of them would have just jostled my head a little bit, I've been either paraplegic or dead at the scene. So that's my near fatal. And then, well, the next thing I remember is I could feel the wind from the the helicopter just beating down on my face. And then I get loaded up. What seemed like, I know there's a lot more room in this, but it seemed like I was loaded up into a tube because it felt like I couldn't open my eyes. Apparently they hit me with morphine or something, but I could not open my eyes this entire time. And it felt like the roof was like inches from my nose. I don't know if you ever had that situation or that feeling. But as they're flying me to Charleston, West Virginia to emergency on Medevac, I distinctly remember, and this is a weird part. Now, I mean, of course, you got to remember that at this time I am so into God. I'm listening to God on podcasts. I'm listening to the French Christian stuff. I'm listening to a lot of things that just would blow the normal person's mind when it comes to getting contact and getting close to God. And I distinctly remember what felt like this man's face inches from my face. And I'm wondering if I should call and contact the medevac group there and see if I can get one of the who was on duty that day, who was on my call. But this flight surgeon or flight medic or whatever it's called, I distinctly remember saying, he yelled in my face. He said, "You're telling me that if I die today without Jesus Christ, I'm going to go to hell?" And Tony, you'll appreciate this. I remember smiling and I said, "Yep." And I did. That was the last thing. Now, the next memories I get is my daughter's telling me I'm back home. Oh no, I'm not at home. I'm actually in in a room, and I just have this memory of this first sergeant coming into my room when I was over in Germany and had my appendix taken out. And he came up to my bed and he said, "Now, Private, you can lay there and you get sick, or you get up and you get better." And that was just ringing through my head. So I remember even I was in and out days with the medication. I remember grabbing my IV pole and I walked the hallway two or three times. And apparently they let me. I mean, I guess they figure, well, if he's up, he's able to get up and walk around. I was only there 2 days and then they sent me home. But later on, they come to find out they needed to do a neck surgery. They didn't do a CT scan of my neck or anything. But it was completely bone. So I had to have a C5, C6 fusion where they go through the front of the neck. And to be fused, I got a piece of cadaver inside me with long titanium clip. Anyway, so later on, while I'm back at my house, my daughter was there for the weekend, for the summer. And she was telling me, "Dad, you don't remember anything." I was like, "No, I have no idea what was going on." She said, "You was hitting on every nurse in there." And the blonde nurse will come in there and you start, "Hey, Penny, how you doing?" Because I like Big Bang Theory. And there are these blonde nurses. And I'd be, you know, putting the moves on her, putting the moves on this other one. I had no clue. I can only say I was drugged out of my mind. Anyway, but what she did say is like, "You don't remember what happened in the ER?" I was like, "No, honey, I don't remember nothing." She goes, "Well, the doctor had to come over to you and told you to be quiet several times." And I said, "Well, what was I doing?" She said, "You was singing the loudest you could sing hymnals. You was singing gospel songs the entire time you was in the ER. And nobody could get you to shut up." And finally got me out of there. But I ended up about 6 months, 3 months after the wreck to have the C5, C6 surgery. And then I ended up going to stay in a home because I couldn't work for another 3 months. Then it was off and on again when I was going back to work, but I never did drive. They only wanted me to do office work. And that's more due to the fact of the the owner of the business, he took it personal that I wrecked his vehicle. What actually happened, I do not know what happened at the wreck. There was a 25-mile-an-hour curve at the top. I was loaded with 7,500-gallon dyed diesel. I had a four-compartment tanker, and I was going around. It was making a right-hand turn at a 25-mile-an-hour curve, and my memories are, and this is mostly feeling than it is actual remembering, if you can understand what I mean by that.
Right.
It was like I felt the tire, when I was going around the curve, the tire started, I hit a patch of pea gravel, and I was sliding into the other lane. And I think there may have been other vehicles coming. And what did I do? I yanked, was a big mistake. I yanked the wheel right into a right-hand curve, and that lifted the rear axle on the trailer, and that just flopped me right over. So I couldn't tell you if that's for certain or not, but all they checked out the vehicle and to see if there was any mechanical defect when that wreck happened. They couldn't find it. And that's the only thing I could think of.
Yeah, that actually makes sense, you know, that type of accident happening. Because when, you know, like, you know, when you drive a truck, you know, they always tell you if a deer runs out in front of you, don't try and swerve to miss it. Hit it. You know, as mean as that sounds, people out there might be going, oh my word, you hit Bambi. Yep. Because if it's me hitting Bambi or me rolling the truck because I swerved to miss it.
Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, it sounds like it did. Now, I imagine that the police did an investigation of the site of the accident, right? And they came back with what they had actually, you know, what they thought, what their theory was.
You know what? The state trooper was as a guy I went to high school with. His name was John Siner. Okay, when he was on the scene, he and I actually went back and asked for a report so I could figure out what they thought went wrong. Mm-hmm. And he actually told me, he said, "Man, when I got there and I saw you there, of course, apparently, I had my left arm chewed up by all the glass and everything that broke from the mirror and the window." But he said there was blood everywhere. I mean, I must have blood like a sick pig. You know what I'm saying? I was just bled out. And he said he thought I was dead. Cause the way I had my seatbelt on, but the way my neck was and, the amount of blood everywhere, he thought I was just a fatal injury right there. But they got me out, and he said the report, he couldn't figure out. You know, and the only thing he gave me a warning on, that's the only thing I got, was a warning, failure to maintain vehicle. And it changed my life in a lot of ways, but there was a lot of pain involved. But you know what? In the end, I didn't really suffer.
So when you had this accident, do you think that there was anybody that was nearby that saw what happened? I mean, or because I know you mentioned about how, like, your feeling was that maybe when this happened, you, like, there was cars coming or something like that. Do you think that people that saw it just drove away, or do you think that anybody did stop, or what? Who was the first person to report the accident?
Well, driving away, probably. Well, it was a two-lane. Well, it was three-lane. It has a trucker lane all the way up the mountain, and it was at the very end of the trucker lane that I flopped over. So actually, I actually split the two lanes. A tractor and trailer split the two lanes. I was told there was if the traffic was stopped, there was a truck driver on scene. He may or may not seen it actually happen. That I don't know. But I've seen trucks flop over in front of me before. But like I said, I don't know if he actually seen anything. All I know is when it flopped over, it busted all four baffles in the trailer, and then it split about a 3-inch slit at the very top, and it dumped about 1,500 gallons of that dyed diesel.
Right.
But other than that, no, I couldn't tell you. Actually, I'm gonna tell you what's strange, and I don't know if you ever, Brian. I know you've got a lot more years of been talking on this, but do you ever have dreams about rollovers?
Yep.
Okay. I tell you what, I had some really horrible dreams about having rollovers. But after I had that wreck, it was like, where'd they go? It was like they didn't matter. Done that. Yeah. It just like it disappears. That fear disappears.
Jeez.
That's crazy. You know, I never thought about that before, but yeah, I've had dreams about that kind of stuff. And it scares you. Wake up and you're like, thank God that was just a dream.
Oh gosh. Yeah. I've had plenty before. And they always centered around, it wasn't about running into somebody. It was always about flopping over, just for some reason. Of course, I love tankers. I mean, I've hauled box, I've hauled straight, I've hauled flat. But tankers, it was just, that was my niche. I loved it. It was something about dropping. Now, I like dropping fuel, and there's a lot of stories about dropping fuel. You at gas stations, I know there's a lot of truckers out there listening about what that's dropped fuel at gas stations. There's a lot of dumb people out there. A lot.
Yes, sir.
Okay, let me tell you about one. Yeah, up in Rockwood, West Virginia, I was dropping fuel, and you have to fight to get in every place, depending on how busy they are, because nobody wants a trucker to get in there while they could go in and to get their scratch off lottery tickets, their pack of smokes and their Big Mac or whatever they got. They don't want you to get in there. You got a job, but they're not going to wait 15 seconds to let you back up. They're going to whip in behind you or something like that. You know how it goes.
Yeah.
So I back into the place. I put my barriers up. I'm dropping fuel. Now, I don't know. Have y'all ever been around a fuel tanker dropping fuel?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, these older gas stations, they're a lot less regulated than what the newer ones are. And the older fuel, when you start dropping fuel, you might have three buckets, you know, where you're dropping down into the bucket down in the ground, right? On a 6-inch pipe. One of them, and they all have cross ventilation. So you're dropping in one, you got the other two open. You know, you got this 15, 20 foot vapor plume coming straight up out of it. It's not supposed to act that way. But the old ones, when they start deteriorating inside the tank, the baffles, they have cutoffs, but the baffles cutoffs let the vapor vent out through the other tanks. And because you got this 6 inches of diameter of fuel dropping into a tank, and you're expected to see a 3-inch pipe on top of the building blowing out all the vapor when it's actually coming out straight out of the ground. Well, I'm here at Rockwood, and I'm doing this now. I mean, it's coming out. It's bubbling. You can see it bubbling. It's blowing out. And this guy, he whips around the corner. I'm looking at him eyeball to eyeball, and he takes a cigarette and puts it right in his mouth. And I'm like, whoa! Don't be doing that, you know. He's like, nah. He just fans me down. He does that hand motion like, I know, I know. And he walks over to me. He's just being my buddy then. After I'm about to get all redneck on him, and he goes, hey, I got a question for you. And I said, what's that, buddy? He said, if I drill a lit cigarette down in that tank, what do you think would happen? I said, it'd probably go out. He said, you probably go out. I said, yeah, because the ensuing explosion would probably put it out. That's what would happen.
What was his face like?
He just sat there, ha, ha, you know, of course, he smiled with all three teeth, you know what I'm saying? But he had choppers. He could eat corn through a picket fence.
Yeah, you gotta love those people, you know, that they ask they know it. Like, well, I would think they would know it's a dumb question, you know. It's like, why are you wasting my time? You know, I'm here working, you know, just go about your business. Don't ask me stupid questions like what happens when you put fire on fuel, idiot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that same mentality shows you the guys that when you see the videos of them dumping gasoline on an open flame and wonder, why is that flame going into my tank? Now it's all over me.
Right. Yes. Exactly.
I had a guy when I first started driving truck for Pitt, and that was my first job that I was hauling any kind of hazmat. So I was very, I mean, it's good to be, you know, careful with hazmat,
right?
But I was like hypersensitive. I was like, you know, I didn't know. I was like, you know, if it says flammable, I don't want any flames anywhere near my truck at all, you know?
Right.
But I had this one guy at a delivery. I think I was picking up. No, I was delivering freight. And he hops on the back of my truck and walks in with a lit cigarette. And there's drums of flammable right in front of him. And probably nothing would have happened. You know, nothing did happen. But I remember I was like, yo, don't you see the sign flammable? Get off my truck. I didn't invite you on the truck. I went off on him and stuff. He's like, I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. Don't come on my truck unless I invite you. I wouldn't walk in your house. I started going off on him.
Hey, but, that sounds exactly kind of like
that. When I was younger, I had a lot less patience than I do today, and I don't have a lot today. So,
is that possible?
Yeah, you don't work down. So.
Yeah, I mean, I was new at the job, and right. I was just so grateful I had the job. I was like, I am not losing this job because you blew my truck up, you know,
yeah, with me in it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there was
for that job.
Absolutely. Oh, I tell you what, here's a story you might, it's just a small one. One of the night coming through here through Tennessee, when I was going coast to coast, and I was hauling, at that time I was probably just hauling polyglycol, you know, something just simple chemical, not hazardous. It's just, it can't be hazardous when it's in some of your food, right?
Sure.
it's in antifreeze, and they tell you don't let it sit where dogs and cats can drink it because they'll kill them, but they'll put it in your food. So I'd go figure. but it,
I'm not across, eating anymore. I'm not eating anymore.
Ken, you're tempting me to go down my conspiracy rabbit hole here. So I'm just going to keep my mouth shut because I could go off on a fluoride tangent. You know,
fluoride, chlorine.
Fluoride in the water. Yeah.
Hey, that's all right. You get a double shot when they use fluoride water as a base for their polyglycol sweeteners, and then you have Mio.
Yeah, exactly.
Mio, yes. Is that little drink.
The little squeezy stuff you put in your water bottle.
It's like the third ingredient, polyglycol. And jeez. Yeah, it's just sweetener, and so you not to have too much of it because it would kill you. But anyway, as I was coming through one night, I stopped at a rest area in between Nashville and Cookeville on I-40 here. And I remember driving in, I had to go. I was busting. You know how it goes. So it's got to be early November. And as I'm walking up to the rest area where the bathrooms are, I see this blonde woman with these big old round black rimmed glasses. And she's got the orange and the white striped sweater, you know, because Tennessee Vols fan. She's got white shorts on, okay, and flip flops. And it's November, and it's cold as crap outside. And she's hugging her purse. She's got one of them big old man killer purses, and she's got a cigarette, and she's puffing on it. And I really didn't pay attention because it's not my, I'm just wanting to do what I got to do. The next thing I know, I see her take a big long drag on that cigarette. She goes, "Hey, you want a date?" Sounds just like that. You want a date? And I was like, "No, ma'am."
Is that no ma'am or no sir? I'm not sure.
Well, let's just say if it was a sir, I don't want to go into graphic details, but you can tell by shorts if he's packing heat, you might want to say.
Pack and heat. Oh, that's funny.
But no, you want a date? And that was like, that would be an instant. I mean, that lovely, sultry voice almost turned me on. But I had to go from there. I just wanted to get out of there. I couldn't get out of there quick enough, actually.
Yeah. You always give yourself. You gotta live on the edge, Ken.
That's too close to the edge. That's over the edge.
You got to try new things in life.
Yeah, new things. That's one thing I have never done was purchase commercial love.
Amen to that, brother.
That's not in my wheelhouse.
Nope. Commercial love.
Before we started this conversation, recording and stuff, we talked about my fear of going to jail. Yeah, I would never.
Hello.
No thanks.
Hey, Tony, you want a date?
Pass.
I'm serious. It was like she had a half pound of gravel in her throat when she was talking. It was bad. Well,
so
go ahead.
I was just going to say, I wanted to make sure I brought this up because I know I was going to miss it because I misspelled it on my notes, but
brought to the attention by his father.
Yeah. I'm looking at it and I'm already confusing myself. So I want to make sure I say,
that's how I confuse a lot of people.
So you saw a meteor explode over New Mexico.
In my notes, I
wrote down Metro. So you saw a Metro explode, which would be a great story too.
That would be interesting.
I've seen a train falling from the sky and the whole thing explode right before the city.
Wonderful. Tell us all about it.
Actually, y'all remember Hellbop? Brian, was you driving there that time?
Yeah.
Did you get fortunate enough to go out west?
No, I didn't.
Well, I'll tell you what, Hellbop in New Mexico and Arizona, Texas, out there in the prairies, you cannot believe how beautiful that was. And it lasted for a few weeks and it was awesome. But one night, heading down and I can't remember the city. All I remember was a two lane highway, and I was out in the middle of the desert and you could see horizon. I mean, there was no trees. There was no hills or anything, and it was utterly dark out there. Only light was inside your cab or out in your headlights. There was nothing else out there except the starlight. And I'm 20 miles from this little town, and then out of nowhere I see this the streak of light coming down directly. It was like almost like a missile shot at that town. It was so quick. And I'm going to say that it probably got maybe 1 to 2 miles at the most above that town. And it exploded. And when it exploded, now granted, this is 20 miles away. And there was like a 4 to 5 second delay. And as soon as I saw that brilliant white flash, I felt about 4 to 5 seconds away, I felt it in my chest. It hit me. And I'm inside the truck driving down the road. That's how big a concussion wave was. And I get to town. This is the strange part. I finally get to where I'm going through that town. There's not a soul outside. I would think I was going to see the streets littered with people trying to figure out what went on. It only took me another 10 to 15 minutes to get there. But it was so weird. It was almost like a ghost town when it happened.
Yeah, I can imagine that would be a scary event for people to go through that was right above them.
Well, I mean, I know for certain if I heard an explosion, I'd be out.
Yeah, I would too. I mean, I'm going to tell you something that happened when we were young and we had a house trailer. And, you know, our younger days when we were a lot less financially secure than we are now, you know, and not that I'm financially secure, but you know what I mean. When you're
let
young
me tell you how bad married. It was. Let me tell you how. Hold on a second. Let me get that story. He talks about not being financially secure. I remember having to climb on top of the roof to be able to seal the roof.
That's
because
right.
It was leaking and stuff.
That's right.
And we had a possum climb through our floor.
That's right.
One night. It was not the greatest trailer.
Right.
And you say mobile home. It was like
you're lucky it wasn't moving when you were standing still.
Yeah, it was an old trailer when we moved into it. So, anyways.
But anyway, this is the point I'm making is and this is what's hard for me to understand is that people didn't come out and investigate this thing and weren't caught by, you know, what in the world was that? I'm Michelle and I are sleeping in bed and I heard an explosion. It rippled across the trailer park It woke me up. It did not wake up my wife. I got up out of bed. It woke Tony up. Oh, it didn't wake you up? Mm-hmm. It woke me up. Anyway, it woke me up.
Woke Tanya up.
And I guess it woke Tanya up. I'm like, what in the world was that? I mean, it was a huge explosion. I walk outside. I mean, I put on my, you know, got dressed, put on my boots. It was wintertime. I walk outside, walk down the hill, and I see all these fire trucks and everything. By the time I got dressed and got out there, and, you know, this trailer exploded. And, you know, everybody in the trailer park, except for my family, apparently heard it because they were all out there looking. That's why I can't understand how a comet or a meteor could explode over a city and nobody comes out to investigate or see.
Not a soul. I didn't see anybody.
I mean, I don't know if that's just the difference between people from New Mexico and people from, you know, Kutztown, Pennsylvania. I don't know. Maybe so little happens around here that it's like when something does, woo.
I'm mad at you for not waking me up. I got the news the next morning when I woke up, and we had off from school that day because we had an ice storm that night as well, right. And everything was frozen over. So we had off from school. And when you told me that you heard it, you woke up, you went outside, the sky was red, Tanya woke up, I'm like, why would you not wake me up? Like, I'm a boy. I want to see this cool stuff.
I mean, there was stuff blowing everywhere. There was pieces of this house, you know, trailer in the trees. There's insulation up in the trees.
All like, over the place.
Whole clothes. I mean, I was like, and I think there was one fire, anyway, one firefighter who was hurt, who was injured in this thing.
It was a guy,
I'm not mistaken.
If I remember
correctly,
it's
been a long time. So,
if I remember correctly, the one guy that we went to church with, Ted, his dad was a firefighter. And if I remember correctly, it may not have been his dad, but one of the firefighters was there. What happened is they went on. There was a leak in the stove.
Propane, yeah,
and they smelled the leak, so they called it and they left the trailer.
Yep.
The fire company or somebody called to see an update, and the phone ringing lit it and it exploded.
And it did, and exploded like crazy.
At the time it exploded, the fire guys were already on the porch.
Right.
And one of the guys got blown in through another trailer.
Yeah.
And
it was crazy.
It totaled trailers, like three trailers over and stuff from this thing. It was crazy.
But anyway,
yeah,
you know, that's just, you know, that was an aside just because it's so strange for me to hear that something like that, like a meteor exploding over a town, would not draw out everybody. I mean, it would draw me out. I mean, you know, a house exploding drew me out. Of course, you know, what else you get in Kutztown, Pennsylvania? Yeah. So
this looked like a town that was that had a 2-lane road that goes through it. You know, so I thought I was on when I went entered the town. I exited the town. I thought I saw the majority of the town, and I didn't see I mean, I didn't see cops anywhere. I didn't see no ambulance. I didn't see nothing.
Right.
All right. So, an alternate theory: it was a UFO. And you witnessed some kind of abduction.
Abducted. Yeah, absolutely. I think when that felt in my chest, I actually went to an alternate timeline.
Yes.
Okay, so we have gone from Hammer Lane Legends to The Confessionals, everybody.
My other show.
Yes. Say that again, Tony. Hey, what show is that?
I have another show.
Hey, Tony, if you ever need more stories on that side of the thing, I got several more on that too, but we could stick with just trucking right now.
Yeah, shoot me an email. No, we can definitely get you on, man. So yeah, I'll tell you, man, I don't know if I probably would have crapped myself if I saw something like that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Even the fact that you felt it like that, and you said you were what, 20 miles away?
I was 20 miles away when I started into this the town, and I was expecting everybody. I mean, it took maybe 15 minutes at the most to get there.
Yeah.
It was just a 2-lane road. It was dead at night. It was like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
It's amazing when you see something like that, though. I mean, it is so cool to see, and yet it's scary. And that's why because you can imagine what that sounded like. I mean, besides just
it was a brilliant flash too. I mean, even if you was asleep and you was within your window was. Could see out towards that area where the meteors come down. It had to flash like a strobe light inside your house.
Yeah. Oh my word. Yeah.
Yeah. I You know, that'd be something for the memory bank for sure. I wouldn't mind at least being able to tell the story that I saw something like that, because, you know, you hear about meteors coming into the atmosphere, but a lot of times they say they break up and they burn up and stuff in the atmosphere. They don't really make it. And I know there was, I think at least it was going around the video circuit for conspiracies and stuff as to what it could be. But I think it came down, it was a meteor, but I think it was in Michigan, a meteor hit somewhere in Michigan, and it was caught on video, and it looked, it hit the ground, and it looked like this like giant explosion. And it's just like, man, it, like, I was just thinking about this week. It's funny that we're talking about this, because I was just thinking about this week, because I think earlier this past week, there was a news update that I got on my phone saying that the next day, I think it was Monday, because it said, I think Tuesday, that there was going to be an asteroid passing by Earth that is extremely close. And it turned out it was still like 400,000 miles away or something like that, but that's pretty close apparently. And I just started thinking, I was like, man, can you, like, I can't imagine an asteroid actually hitting the Earth. Like, I started thinking about all the stuff that's out there, all the stuff flying around out there and whizzing by the Earth, and we're still here. And it's just like, holy crap. Like, it's scary when you start thinking about it, but then you start thinking about how big space is and the odds of something actually being on a direct course of hitting us and stuff. It's really hard because it's a lot of space. So
I know what you're trying to say.
There's a lot of space out there. Space.
Yeah. Space has a lot of space.
Hey,
but yeah.
You want to hear about a couple near misses in
Most
LA?
Most definitely.
For sure.
Yes,
for sure.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, I don't have you, either one of you, been to LA?
No, but I was, but no. Sorry, my voice got a little crazy there. He caught me mid vape.
Oh, I see how it is. You're vaping while I'm trying to talk.
I thought.
Buy one up for me.
I thought I had a chance there. Well, you know, Jack, keep this in.
Oh my god, that was hilarious, dude.
No, to answer your question, no, I have not been to LA, but I've been thinking about when the world goes back to normal, going out there and doing some kind of show or something in LA. But not with you, Dad, now that you laughed at me.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it's not going to happen. Okay. Yeah.
You mean the world's not going to get back to normal, or he's not going to go to LA?
Both, apparently.
Either or. Take your pick. But down in LA, on South LA, there's a route called Highway 90, and this one tickles me. But Highway 90, the day I can't remember the day. It was probably midsummer. August area, and I'm in there, and I'm heading from Highway 90 up towards Compton, where our tank yard was at, and we had a dropping. We dropped dirty tanks; they'd clean it, and then we'd pick up a good clean tank and head on to the next run. Well, on Highway 90, the water was just coming down. Yeah, I mean, it was stop and go traffic. There's each coming and going lane. There's I think it was five or six lanes. And I'm over in the trucker lanes, which is the two right lanes. So I'm in the far right one. It's bumper to bumper, and which was funny because the rain is coming down so hard, you just get up enough speed just to hit your brakes, and then you start sliding. So all I did was just put it in fourth gear, third or fourth gear, and let it creep because that's how fast we're going. And the rain just started coming down again. I mean, it started to come down hard. And I look back in my mirror, and I see these line of cars because the traffic broke. You know how they do the slinky, the rocket chair. Everything moved one time. Then everything stopped at one time. So I'm watching on my mirror just to see what's going on because I can't see nothing in front of me. I'm behind another truck. And just as I'm looking back here, I see this little white pickup, and he's on the lane beside me, and he's coming hard. And he hits the brakes, and there's about 3 inches of water on the ground. And, of course, what's he do? He starts hydroplaning, he whips it right over into my lane, bam, right into my ICC bumper. Now, you know, he was probably going about 35, 45 miles an hour with the slide. You know, it magnifies with the slide, so it's probably closer to 55 miles an hour. So he loses 6 inches of his truck. You understand? So it's pushed back. I see he's got a airbag went off. He's pushing it down. And I'm looking at him. I'm just shaking my head because I didn't feel a thing. I'm fully loaded. So I start the traffic starts moving again, and I start pulling over into the onto the shoulder. And I'm on Highway 90. They got these huge, I'm talking bridges that are 500 or 600 feet off. No, not 500 or 600. About 200 or 300 feet off the ground. I mean, they go over, up and over the interstate. So I'm going to where I can see there's a break in the rain, and I pull up so I can get out, and I leave the tail end of my truck in the where the rain's not hitting. And he's waving at me like I'm about to just haul off from him. And I was like, no, I assured him. I threw my blinker, my hazards, and I pulled up the side of the road. And here he comes, cluck, 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 cluck. You know, the death sounds of a truck trying to run with its radiator through its fan belt and everything else. So he comes pulling up the side on the shoulder, and he gets out, and I got my insurance card, and I'm looking at the truck, and there ain't a thing wrong with my truck. He knocked about 6 inches of reflective tape off my ICC bump.
You gotta love and, that.
Yeah, I mean, I like that. I love that. Those odds. Anyway, so I got my paperwork in my hand, and he comes out. He's like, man, and I'm filling out his paperwork. He gives me his, and I'm, you know, we're exchanging stuff. The man, I don't know what I'm going to do. So what's wrong, buddy? He said, that's my company truck. I said, well, man, they'll forgive you for this. I mean, this stuff happens. He said, yeah, but you don't understand. This is my second wreck this week.
Oh, my God.
And I said, and he goes, well, I don't know what they're going to do. And I looked at him, and I'm the king of sarcasm, because sarcasm is just my sword I wield. I said, they're probably going to fire you. Just wait a second. And then as I'm saying that, out steps around the corner of my truck, because I'm not paying attention to traffic, you know. And apparently this white Suburban is parked almost even with the rear of my the trailer. And this next thing I hear was this guy go, all right, which one of you guys hit me? And he sounds just like that, okay? He looks like Bill Cosby, and he's got white pants on. He's got a white belt on with a white belt buckle, a white polo shirt. And as he's saying it, he's grabbing that belt and he's pulling up his pants. And he is a man of color, of course. And I look at him, and I'm looking back to the guy that hit me, and I said, I didn't hit anybody, and he hit me. And I'm pointing at the other fella. And he says, well, I don't know, but somebody hit me. And I looked down, I said, is that your Suburban? He said, yes, it is. That's a big white Suburban. Well, I said, it's probably the guy owns that bumper, because he had a big old, he had that tow hitch, and the front of the bumper was jerked off right on the bumper. It was stuck to his vehicle. And in California, they do front and back license plate. That's right. Probably guy owns that bumper.
Yeah. It's one of those situations and stuff where, you know, you got to keep your mouth shut at the scene of the accident. And that's what I've been taught with all my driving. It's like, if you have an accident, don't admit anything. Call safety. Call the police. Stay away from people until you get counsel, you know, and that's what I do.
I will tell you what, at that time, you got to think during this time, if we didn't have, this is pre-2001, 9/11, you know what I'm saying? So regulations and stipulations were not as strict when it came to company policies. But as soon as he hit me anyway, my dispatcher said, well, did he damage the truck? I said, yeah, he knocked the reflectors off the tape. He said, oh, okay, just go on. They just get his information going. He hit me. There's no doubt about it. So they were like, just head on, keep on moving, trucker. You know?
Yeah.
It didn't bother them whatsoever.
I had a lady, I was driving in the Philly area, and I was in a left-hand turning lane. My light turned green, so I started going through the intersection. It was like a Y, and I was going left, and all of a sudden, this car that was in the right-hand lane that's supposed to be going right decided to change their mind. They cut me off, and I'm not going fast. I mean, I'm just starting out pulling the truck, and they misjudged their cutting me off, and they caught the front right corner of my truck, and so I get through the light, she stops, I stop, and she gets out of the truck. And, you know, I'm kind of getting myself together here before I, you know, dealt with the situation. I had every intent to get out and, you know, handle it right there. Mm-hmm. But she gets out of out of her car, and she looks at me, she looks at her car, and she starts yelling at me and throwing her hands in the air. And I was like, oh, that's it. I just called the police. I stayed in my truck. I didn't say one word to her until the police got there. Cause I was like, I'm not dealing with it. I'm not, you know, trying to have her then say he said this, he said that. Nope, I stayed in my truck. And the police officer, you know, it really wasn't a big deal. I mean, it was just, you know, a fender bender kind of thing.
Right.
And he's like, okay, well, you know, exchange information with her and you can go. And he was about to leave, and I said, you're leaving? And he said, yeah, I gotta go. And I said, can you just stick around until I'm done with this? I said, she seemed pretty upset before you got here, and I don't want to be left alone with her. And he hemmed and hawed about it, and I was like, listen, man, I don't know what to tell you. I feel more comfortable with you sticking around and stuff. And he did. He stuck around. And it was funny though. Her tune is so much changed when I was exchanging information with her. She was so kind and nice and apologetic. And I'm like, well, that's one of the first things I learned is never apologize for an accident. So
right.
I ain't saying nothing. Just give me your information. And they got pens and paper. Go ahead.
No, no. You said they got what?
They got pens and papers out to exchange information. I said, guys, this is 2019. Like, let's get our phones out. Just take pictures of the information. It's easier that way.
Exactly.
And it's accurate. It's just, you know, a few seconds. But
tell you what.
Anyways.
Well, of course, I am the flip phone in the Rand McNally generation. Me and Brian were.
Yes, sir. You got that right.
You know, if you didn't have a clipboard with 15 pins, you didn't have information. You didn't have a way to transport information.
You got that right.
Yeah, you had to be ready for anything. Flip phones did not take pictures high quality like you have today.
Yeah, we got supercomputers today.
Yeah, it's in your pocket.
Yep.
Yeah, just like the ones we took to the moon.
Oh man, Ken, we could go down that rabbit hole. But speaking of the moon, speaking of meteors and stuff, you used to pull tanker hauling rocket fuel to NASA rocket test sites in Cali. Is that right?
It was just, it was just the one time. Well, no, actually, it was twice. And it was a high grade, it was like ultra high grade rocket fuel, which basically, if you want to know the truth, it's like white kerosene. If you're coming right across white kerosene, it's not like some super formula or anything, but it's ultra pure and they refine it really well. And, you know, cause they don't want no impurities whatsoever. I told you about this, but I cannot remember where exactly. I know it's in the southern region of California. But I pulled into the gate. And of course I met with armed guards and, they escort me, tell me, do not whatsoever get out of your vehicle. I was like, I'm good with that. You got the gun. I'm compliant. So, we go in and they take me in. It was almost like a maze. They were taking me left, here, right, right, left, right. And it was just all through this place and come up to these. I don't know if you've ever seen those underground barracks or bunkers where they keep things like fuel and ammo and stuff like that in the military. But they have these underground reinforced concrete bunkers with earth going over top of them to keep hazardous materials in case they do explode or decide to explode. They don't take out the whole base. They just take out that bunker. So I'm in the middle of this Bunker Field, and I don't get to see the rockets. I don't get to see nothing. I mean, the route they took me, I didn't even get to see a building. He parked me there, and this guy out of nowhere, I still cannot remember to this day where he came from. He pops up on the side of my steps, grabs my door and says, "Don't get out of the vehicle. I'll have you done in about 15, 20 minutes." It's like, what? I mean, it generally takes about an hour for the drop feed. He must have had, I seen him climbing up on top of the tank. He opened up the dome. I seen him go behind my trailer. I seen a hose come out of nowhere, and bam, 15, 20 minutes, I was out of there. They did not hesitate. They must have sucked that tank dry, because it didn't take no time. It was kind of interesting, but I didn't, like I said, I would like to seen something, but there is there was no gift shop or nothing like that. I didn't say, I dropped fuel here at NASA rocket facility.
Buy the t-shirt, right?
Yeah, I would like that.
Yeah.
There was, it's funny you say that, because there was an interview I did for the Confessionals with a guy who drives LTL for Old Dominion. And he told me a story. Yeah. So after I got done doing that interview with the guy, I was thinking, man, that would have been great to put on Hammer Lane, you know, but it was like a toss up. I could have put it on the Hammer Lane, but I put it on the Confessionals. And he talked about how, you know, there's people that have Raven Rock t-shirts and stuff, which is the underground base that he was going to. And I saw even a picture of Barack Obama wearing a Raven Rock t-shirt and stuff, almost like he was on vacation and stuff. So yeah, I mean, you would think there'd be a gift shop or something that you could go and just get something.
My friend went to Raven Rock and all I got was this lousy t-shirt.
Exactly. Exactly.
I didn't even have enough time to get in there and take a pee break, because I was in and out. That was probably the quickest I've ever dropped any kind of liquid. So they didn't mess around. They didn't want me there.
So last thing I want to ask you about here is the wastewater down to the dry oil wells in Texas. Now, when I see that, I'm thinking, is that sanitary? Like, are we dropping like people's poop and used dry oil wells or what? I think sewage.
Well, you know what? I couldn't get, now you're, every time this was a hazmat load, okay, this was a bad, every gallon has a certain weight to it. Water is like eight pounds per gallon. Fuel is like 7.5, and maybe 7 to 7.5, depending on the fuel. This wastewater was closer to slurry. It was like almost 13 pounds per gallon. It had so much particulates and stuff in it. And to this day, I have no idea, no clue what was in it. It was just, they had, when they give you MSDS at the time, I can't remember what it's called now, but the MSDS, and it was like 2 pages long. It just had all kinds of stuff in it. Okay. So that's what I had to have on me legally go down there. So I'm leaving out of New Jersey, actually, is when I got that money. And I took it down to Corpus Christi, Texas, where they have these dry oil wells. Now, come to find out years later that those wells were starting to fill back up with oil. So I don't know if that operation stopped or not, but that's where the most hazardous stuff was dropped. And from my understanding, you're dropping it down through a mile or two of earth. I mean, not just dirt, but rocks. And it's going below several, like at least a mile below water tables. It's dropped down there, and that's where they would dump it. And apparently from what their thought process is, it takes several thousand years for that to seep back up. By that time, it turns back into something else. I have no idea.
But either way, we're
problem.
Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not our
problem.
It'll take so many years. You'll have kids that all have three eyes on one side of their head and a tooth thrown out the back of their neck. I mean,
oh, this is what they're complaining about, American.
Yeah, that's a fracking thing.
Yeah, they're like we leave such a carbon footprint and all this stuff. We're taking our wastewater and just dropping it in the earth. Ah, somebody else will deal with it.
Well, you know what? Maybe that'll become more oil in the future.
Maybe. I didn't know that oil wells could fill back up with oil like that after they were already dry.
Well, they could pump the oil comes from the surrounding shale, the shale rock that's around the oil deposit. And over time, they can, just like anything else, you have a sponge, and if that sponge is squeezed, it'll leak out something, even though everything around it's dry. So that's basically what that shell will actually leak out oil and eventually would fill it back up again. Of course, they don't want to tell you that because Brian remembers the Jimmy Carter oil shortages or gas shortages, you know.
Yep.
And of course, everybody wants to go green and stuff, which is a bunch of hoo-dooey. But this planet, God has made such an incredible planet. There's no way on God's green earth, and I say that implicitly, that man will ever be able to destroy this earth.
So when we hear politicians say, you know, our oil wells are dried up, we can just say, they'll fill back up.
They will fill back up. Yeah, absolutely. And here's the thing. I mean, they're always tapping anyway. You get out there in the Gulf and they're drilling down below the surface of the water before they even hit the earth, somewhere up, a couple thousand feet. And then they go underground a mile or so. You tell me, this earth, we only explore like somewhere around we know less than 10% of the 70% water. What's actually on the bottom of these things? Geologically, what's underneath our feet? I know. Yeah. God, this place, it was meant to survive. It was meant to survive for a long, long time.
Yes. I agree with that.
But like anything else, that will all come to fruition when the Nephilim finally do what they're doing.
Yes. Yes. Ken, you're turning the show into the confessionals, my friend. I love it. Get me going on Nephilim. No, but that's a good point that you do have there, though. I mean, they say that, 5% of the oceans have been, explored. So, I mean, if we're out there drilling in the oceans, it makes you wonder what areas of the oceans we haven't even tried to drill in. There's plenty. Don't worry about the spills. Every once in a while it happens. Mop and mop it up. It's fine.
Mop it up. Throw some dry sweep on it and we'll put it down a oil well somewhere. But
it's all good.
No, actually, no. You know, I've been a couple places, Germany and Finland, stuff like that, or Iceland, I mean. And, of course, all across the United States and Canada, they always picture, you always have this one place, this one little pocket of maybe a chemical or a biological happening, something that's nasty, something that destroys life. But that camera focuses in on that little postage stamp. But if you was to take that camera and you pull it back and you went up 100 feet and you look all the way around it, there's nothing but life. You can't contain life. Life is going to expand. And what they want to sell you is fear. Fear is always being sold on TV. You know, the world's going to explode. And, in 12 years, we don't have a Green Deal. We're all going to die. Well, they've been saying that every 10 years, ever since I can remember. And nothing's happened. Nothing's changed.
Every 10 years, there's a new generation of ignorance to pry on.
There is pray and everybody needs to get their participation award for just showing up for 2020.
Yeah, I got a t-shirt that says 2020 on it. Underneath it, it has a 5 stars and only 1 star highlighted and says would not recommend. I wear a shirt that rates our year. But Ken, man, listen, it's been great talking to you, man. I feel like we could probably talk for 3 hours for
sure.
Yeah.
But absolutely.
Thanks for coming on the show, man.
You're very welcome. I enjoyed y'all guys, and I always enjoy your shows too.
Well, that's sure, buddy. We really hope you enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, Dad, what can they do?
They can share the show. We would appreciate it if you share the show with a friend, with a relative. Share the show on your social media platform, whichever one you enjoy, whether it's Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or any other things, Parler, whatever it is. Wherever you enjoy your social media, share the show there. You can also do us a favor and check out HammerlaneLegends.com. Check out the gear. Get something for yourself. Order something from the catalog that's there of items and start a conversation around a t-shirt, around a hoodie, around a coffee mug or whatever. You know, it's always a great way to, you know, to share the show with a friend.
And even at the truck stops, you know, like when you're in the break room,
yes.
You know, drivers talk to drivers. We tell stories. And while you're telling stories, tell them where they can get more stories. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah.
While we're talking about this, you know, we want to see people join the Hammerlane Legends fan page on Facebook. That's a great way to just get information. Lindsay continues to put stuff up there. And I want to say thank you to Lindsay. She's doing an awesome job putting up information and just kind of inspiring conversation there on the Hammerlane Legends Facebook fan page. And Dylan and Joshua and Jackson are all doing great jobs as far as that goes, too. I just want to say thank you to all of them for doing such a wonderful job on the fan page. They really do a great job. And thank you all. And it's great to see the interaction with the fans and all that. Just really, it's really cool. It's really cool.
Yeah. And, you know, Lindsay does a lot of the emails and social media for both shows. Mm-hmm. And Jack's been doing, or Jackson, like you call him.
Yeah.
He's been doing the production for this show. Everything that you guys listen to is Jack's production. And he's been doing a great job. And he's working on a little secret project we're hoping to release next month for the confessionals.
For the other show.
but, you know, it's just a great team effort. And it's really great that the other two guys had come alongside of us on Facebook and kind of took over the group and, you know, was moderators and administrators or whatever they are.
Yeah.
It's just really nice to know that we have some people helping us out and stuff, because it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work on behind the scenes to pull a show off. And we have a great supporting cast.
Yes, we do. And it's always good to give credit where credit is due.
Right. Exactly. So thank you to everybody. Thank you for listening to this show. Hopefully you enjoyed it and you share it. And until next week, keep the hammer down in the hammer lane.
Well, the midnight headlights blind you on a rainy night. Steep grade up ahead, slow me down, making no time. But I gotta keep rolling. Those windshield wipers slapping out of tempo, keeping perfect rhythm with the song on the radio. Yeah, I gotta keep rolling. It was just a baby. Hey, waitress, pour me another cup of coffee. Pop it down, jack me up, shoot me out, flying down the highway. I'm looking for the morning. Ooh, I'm driving my life away. I'm looking for a better way. Song on the radio. Lord, I gotta keep it.